and to this new series, which we've entitled 5:30, and it is part of the Transitions Tuesday programming that we do here at Mind Talk. Every Tuesday we talk about a transition. Today we're going to bring someone in front of the mic, if you will, who is typically behind the mic and a part of Mind Talk, to talk to you about a transition that he is going through. And with that, I'd like to welcome Jim Brown, who is the producer, editor, you name it, of Mind Talk, and has been with the program since its inception 24 years ago. Jim Brown, welcome to this side of the mic on Mind Talk.
Thank you.
Jim, you and I have talked about this program at great length and what your goals were to sort of come out in front of the mic, as we're saying, and tell your story. Your story sort of culminated on May 30th, hence the title 5:30, a day that you received a diagnosis from a neurologist that was what?
That was, I think he calls it mixed dementia, or it's a form of Alzheimer's.
Yes.
And the technical terms you could probably explain better than I can, but I just, I remember the diagnosis, but specifically explaining it in the technical terms so that people will understand it better is, I think you could do that better than I.
Well, what the doctor said was that you had mixed dementia, as you've said, and it was Alzheimer's along with vascular dementia. So there are two different kinds of dementia that you're working on. Dementia actually represents a number of different kinds of dementia. The two that we're talking about that you were told that you have are Alzheimer's and vascular dementia. I want to take you back to that day of May 30th when the doctor first told you what the diagnosis was. What did you think? What did you say?
It was fearful in that I didn't understand what it was. I've heard the term dementia. I've heard the term Alzheimer's before, and I know people who have that condition, and I was in a very simple sense. I was fear. There was fear shot through my body in terms of, well, what the heck is this, and how is it? Why is he saying that I am in that condition? Well, it was. It took a while for that to sink in, and it gave me, as I said, a sense of fear. But it also made me start to wonder and look over my life and say, "Hey, look, what's going on with you? Why is someone saying it about you, especially a professional? And what other indications in your life have occurred that made you wonder or think that that's possible?" So then I start to examine things that had happened and things people have said and things that I've said and things that I've done, and start to put pieces together and realize that, hey, this is a reality. This is true.
The first time that someone hears a diagnosis of dementia, whether it's the individual or a friend or a family member, depending on how the person behaves from day to day, it can either seem like a shock or sort of, yeah, I can see that. As you began to tell family and friends and loved ones that you had a diagnosis of dementia, what was their reaction?
Disappointed, disbelief, because I never had, unbeknownst to me, I had never given them any indication that I had any kind of problem like this, and they had never detected it. They felt that it was a mixed diagnosis that it was incorrect, and that I should get other opinions because there was no way that they could sink their brain into or their minds into understanding or believing that this was who I am.
And in fact, this was your second opinion. You had an initial opinion, and then you went to another person for a second opinion, had a series of tests, and this is the more definitive diagnosis that you received, the one of mixed dementia. Now, you know, everyone who has dementia does not have Alzheimer's, but everyone who has Alzheimer's is certainly on the dementia spectrum. And one of the things that people think about in terms of Alzheimer's is having significant short-term memory loss as the disease progresses, perhaps becoming volatile, any number of both physical and what appear to be emotional experience come to the fore. But for you, for your friends, they weren't aware of any short-term memory loss for you. They weren't aware of you having difficulties with remembering things or balancing a checkbook or any of those things.
No, well, those kind of personal things you keep to yourself, but they wouldn't know that. But they would have, if they'd given it a lot of thought, remember that or recall that there were times when things would slip through the cracks, in a sense.
Yes.
Things that I'm supposed to do or have done, would have done, that didn't happen because I would have forgotten, but they didn't attribute it to any kind of fallacy on my part. It was just more of he forgot that.
And in fact, Jim, you've worked in the communication industry for many years, and part of working in the communications industry, you've worked in television, you've worked in radio, clearly now you've been doing this podcast. Part of that skill set is being able to keep a lot of balls in the air and not let anything fall. So again, another reason why neither you or the people around you would have necessarily thought about Alzheimer's.
True. I think part of that also is that I'm finding out that character or factors of this condition is that you are able to juggle things. You are able to do things. In fact, the more things you do, the more focused you become. And in recent jobs that I've had, that has been my whole modus operandi. I mean, I was very, very swamped, I say, with a variety of different responsibilities in the past on different jobs that I've had that had where I had juggled many balls, many factors, and many facets of a project that kept it going and pulled it together and finished it. So I don't feel as though I've missed anything. I think the experiences I've had have kept me focused to a point where I was able to do a variety of different things, hold some very important jobs, and do some very important projects that had kept me alive and moving forward.
Let me say this, it is
what I have found that when I retired from regular work and started to sit home and do nothing is when things start to slow down for me. Had I stayed as busy as I um, as I was in the past, I think that my whole condition would have not progressed as far as it has.
You know, one of the guests we're going to have in the weeks to come will be a medical doctor as well as a neurologist, as well as a neuropsychologist. Part of why I say that is because I'm not sure that what you're saying is a fully accurate accounting of how dementia and certainly vascular dementia can grow and show itself. One of the things about dementia that we know is that typically a first diagnosis isn't until years and years after perhaps very mild, very subtle symptoms have begun to occur. The other piece that I really want to underscore for people listening, and we will continue to do so in the weeks and months ahead, is that just because you don't remember something doesn't automatically mean you have Alzheimer's. That is a feature of dementia, but that is not a specific hard diagnostic indicator of dementia. So that's really important. And part of why I say that is because certainly with the you've worked in the communication industry and you have been under a lot of stress in your jobs, and you might forget something and it might have had nothing to do with dementia. It might have been that you had 15 things on your plate and your plate can only carry 10, but you were carrying 15. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and continue our conversation with Jim Brown, very recently diagnosed with mixed dementia. In fact, the name of our series, 530, is the date that Jim received his diagnosis. We'll be right back. Jim, let's pick up with initial reaction of family and friends. I think as you began to tell people about your diagnosis and really reflect on it yourself, you were able to recall, and perhaps those closest to you were able to then understand in a different way, perhaps car accidents that you had experienced or things that felt important but were forgotten. How did that impact your closest relationships?
For instance, a lot of what happened to me in those times were not things that people looked at as being faults or things that that they could attribute to anything like Alzheimer's or dementia or anything of that sort, because that was the farthest thing from their minds.
Right.
It was things that I recognized, because after those things would happen, I would realize that something happened that I had no control over and that I worried about. I was very concerned about any accident I would have or any mishap that would happen. Anything that would happen, I would be concerned about it, because I tried to be, this sounds egotistical, but I try to be perfect in what I do. And so when mistakes happen, I get really concerned, because I don't want to make mistakes, but I do. And so when I do, I am very concerned. The last accident I had, which is one that was very, very disturbing to me, was one that caused me to want to stop driving, because it was such a quick event that happened at an evening, on an evening about 5, 6, about 7 o'clock in the evening. I was on my way to a meeting, and the traffic was heavy. It was dusk, dark, and I was changing lanes. And as I went to change the lane, I noticed out of the corner of my eye a car pulling out right beside me. And so I slowed down, and I apparently thought I was slowing down to pull back into the lane, in the lane that I was in. And when I looked up, I was right on the tail of the car in front of me. So when I hit the brakes a little too soon and ran right in the back of the other car. Well, I realized after the fact, a day later, what had happened. And I was very concerned that it happened, because I thought that I was more on top of what I was doing. I was more alert than I was. And I didn't think that that would happen to me. But it did. And because it did, it made me get very concerned about myself and about how I was thinking and what I was doing, especially with driving, because I love to drive. I've driven all my life, and I guess I've gone over 100,000 miles or more up and down the East Coast or more.
Probably a whole lot more. Jim, tell us your age.
I'm now 79.
79 years old.
Yeah.
And you have actually been working, we were talking about that the other day, you've been working in the communications industry for over 50 years, I think you said?
About 56 years.
56 years, that's a whole bunch of life.
It's a lot.
It is indeed. Jim, what was the first thing that initially took you to a neurologist to even begin to be tested? As I understand it, first you went to your primary care physician because you were unsteady. Your gait was off. You were unsteady on your feet. You were tripping and stumbling.
What was going on with me was that I had begun to stumble. I was in a situation where I had several bumping accidents with my legs, bumping into things, corner tables and chairs and things of that sort, but nothing to the point that would give anyone else other than myself an indication that it was something that was a lot wrong with me, that more wrong to me with me than I could read. I realized all these things was going on, but I thought it had more to do with me, my inactivity in terms of sitting around a lot and not really being as active as I normally am, and was very very sure that I had to get out and do more walking and do more exercise and so forth so that I could strengthen my legs and get my balance back together. None of that appeared to have occurred to me that was an effect of any kind of malfunction of my body, of my brain, and so forth. It was all having to do with me not getting the kind of exercise that I thought I needed.
And, there's no reason why it would have. As I understand it, your wife sort of ran the riot act on you and insisted that you go to your primary. Your primary care then wanted you, because you'd been working with the same primary for a while, he then wanted you to see a neurologist. He, too, wanted to understand what the unsteadiness in your gait was. And it was that first neurologist who, after I think it was a couple of years, began to look more closely at how you were functioning as you were reporting an increase in the stumbling and an increase in accidents and an increase in forgetting things, still with nobody thinking that dementia was anywhere in the picture.
True. And a lot of that had to do with how I was reporting to him, because I was never really sure that there's anything wrong other than my physical inactivity. I thought it was more of that than anything else, because that's all my life I'd been physical. Even though I worked primarily in offices and so forth, I still, my outside life was always doing something. If it was softball, it was football, it was bowling, it was a lot of physical activities that kept my body in fairly physical tone. When that stopped, I felt that that was part of what was causing these other things to happen. So when I was reporting to him, I was giving him these other things that I had stopped doing, or that I wasn't doing, which gave him the feeling that some of what was wrong with me was not enough physical activity, and that's how he responded.
And so again, you know, the what you were experiencing, the symptoms, if you will, were very subtle indeed. It wasn't until, as I understand it, you were given what is called a SLUMS test, which is not a diagnostic test. It's sort of a rule out mini look at what's going on with you neurologically. And you scored, according to the neurologist, your score was very low relative to your age and to your academic achievements, as well as to the kind of complex work that you had done all of your lives with putting together productions, whether it was a documentary or it was a comedy, whether it was teaching students or mentoring community groups. The level of functioning and thinking that goes into those activities did not match up with the score that you received on that initial test, which again is not a diagnostic test. As far as I know, there is no purely accepted diagnostic test. Although I do hear, Jim, I don't know if you've heard this, that they've come up with a blood test that they're working on that they believe may be able to give one an indication of dementia long before has been the case recently. I don't know if you heard about that.
Something, but not to the point. I haven't done any actual studying on it, but I did hear something to that degree.
Yeah, we'll have to get a medical doctor in here with us, and a neurologist and a neuropsychologist to talk to us about these things. So I want to go back to, again, that first day when you received this diagnosis. You were shocked. I think your partner was shocked, or at least not prepared for that diagnosis. You thought about it. You tried to understand it. You did a little research, started to tell people about it, and basically everybody said, no, that's not possible. As people were telling you, no, that's not possible, did that help or no?
It fed my ego in two ways. One, it says you're okay, nothing wrong with you. The other one, it gave me the false sense of security of not really paying a lot of attention to myself in a manner which I should. So I got to a point where I worried subconsciously about certain things, but I never really paid a lot of attention to what was going on with me on a regular basis.
Jim, as you and I were talking about the possibility of doing this series, you kept saying that you really wanted to be sort of a mentor, if you will, for the community, that you wanted people to understand the importance of sharing all of their experiences with their primary care, of following the primary care doc's recommendations, of not being silent, of not self-diagnosing. But you also talked about the value and the importance for you, for men in particular, to get medical attention, and African-American men in particular, to seek out help when something was going on that they didn't understand. Why is that so important to you?
It is extremely important to understand how you function and how, when things are not perfect with you, that you should try to figure out why they're not, why they're that way, and make them perfect.
Can I interrupt you for a second, Jim?
Sure.
Because you keep talking about the experience of wanting to be perfect, and that, aside from being slightly, completely impossible, is really sort of burdensome, don't you think?
No, I think it's part of the makeup of men, in a sense. It's very difficult for females to understand this. And I'm saying this as a male, is that we try to do things right. And because we try to do things right, we don't like to make mistakes on things. We like to figure out what has to be done and then do it right. And do it correctly, put it that way. And when we don't make it, and when we don't achieve that, that quote-unquote perfection, it bothers us. We have lived under the false, or we've lived under the shadow of, or live with the perspective of being able to be perfect about with things that we do, of being able to be correct with things that we do, because our ego says we are kings and we should be correct with this and correct with that and correct this way and correct that way, and that we shouldn't make mistakes, but we do make mistakes, and we're not always sure, or not always conscious of, or not always honest with ourselves when we make mistakes.
Jim, we're going to take a break, and what I wonder about is how you are feeling physically and emotionally as we come to the close of today's program.
Feeling that we've run out of time and that we have gone past the time that we've allotted for this program, and that there are many things that I know that we need to cover that we have not covered in this program, and that we have to do it in our next program. But this is part of what this business is about, is being able to stretch and make those decisions and make those things happen that need to happen to get the word out.
Well, again, I heard you tell me that my time is up, so I'm going to wrap it up. As you said, we will continue this on a weekly basis. The series is called 530. I know you have questions as you listen to Jim today, and we'll have many more, and we hope to answer many more and explode some of the myths. One more thing I'd like to add is that, Jim, you are actually engineering Mind Talk as we speak. So the myth that once you get the diagnosis, you sort of fall off the grid is really not true. Folks, again, I want to thank you so much for joining us. This is an experiment for us as well. So we'd like to hear from you as to how you're thinking about this series that we are proposing entitled 530. To reach Jim, you can contact him by sending an email to jim@mindtalk.org. That's MYNDTALK.org. You can send an email to me. That's Pamela, PAMELA, at mindtalk.org. Like to know what your questions and thoughts are. And I want you to know that you can listen to this program or any Mind Talk program at MYNDTALK.org. When you get to the site, you can look at the other platforms upon which Mind Talk appears. And I'm being told I gotta go, so I gotta go. Take care. We'll be right back.